Imagine yourself under a starry sky, around the warm glow of a sacred fire, where speakers gather to share their wisdom and insights. Creating a sacred space where all are welcome to warm their hands, here are your hosts, Caitlin Stormbreaker, Sarinth Odinson, and Jim Two Snakes, discuss spirituality, mythology, animism, and culture around a virtual sacred fire.
Welcome.
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 Welcome. Won't you join us around Grandfather Fire?
A prayer to our helpers, the ones who sacrifice their time, their lives, the moments with their families, to race off to emergencies to help those in need, the ones that spend hours and hours reading and studying and how to save lives, how to bring us back from the brink of death so that we may spend more time here on this earth. To the ones that weave and race through traffic to make it to the accident in time, the ones that lift us and pull us from the wreckage and carry us back just in time. To those with steady hands, steady hearts, and steady minds. Thank you for your sacrifice, for your service, and for your time. Thank you for what you do for us. And thank you for the spirits that guard and watch over you as well. Though you may not believe as we believe, I believe you are living embodiments of guardian angels. Those who race to find the ones in need, the ones that need you most. You find your way, and may you find your way safely. And may you arrive just when you're needed most. Thank you.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Around Grandfather Fire. You're listening to episode number 110. I'm your host, Jim Two Snakes, joined as always by my good friends and co-hosts, Sarah Thornton and Caitlin Stormbreaker. So how's everybody doing tonight?
I've had an interesting week. I actually returned to the greenhouse for 2 days to help dig them out of weeds. Because they don't have very consistent workers this year, so they were a little bit behind.
It's a greenhouse, so you don't mean dig them out of weeds in a literal sense.
No, weeds, just figurative weeds.
Okay, right.
Yes. Yeah. No. Definitely figurative weeds, but planted like 300 flats in 2 days or so by myself. And then went to Coldwater yesterday, which was not bad. It was nice to return to my happy place. Got to see the lake without any docks in it, which is a pretty rare spectacle, especially when it's like 80-something degrees out. And a few brave souls actually on jet skis and out in boats and stuff in the water. So that was kind of fun. But an interesting thing about the prayer that I just did, I usually do an improvised prayer whenever I hear sirens for fire trucks or for ambulances. And it is something similar along those lines of just thanking them for thanking their spirits and offering them a moment of peace and calm within them going to these emergencies and stuff. Right. So I figured it was time I would share it on the podcast. So,
oh, I like that. Yeah, that's really awesome.
Thank you. That's really cool.
How's everything for you, Sarah?
It's busy. It's busy. I just finished up doing the taxes, which I've been putting off to the absolute last fucking minute.
Absolute last minute.
That shit's so dramatic. Just give me the summation at the end of the year. Thank you.
Right. Like other civilized nations.
Right. You cannot have nice things, including your shit tax code. So the other thing that I've been up to is really just as often as I can, taking time to be outside in the weather.
Right.
Like actual spring. The time that I have taken has been really rejuvenating, even if it's just for like 15, 30 minutes to just be outside, to be in the warm and the, just listening to all the birds that live around here. That's really, it's fantastic.
It's been really, so speaking of weather, I don't know if you guys, either one of you have checked the weather yet, but in our particular area, 80 degrees today, chance of snow overnight on Monday, I think it is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And welcome, then back into the 70s.
Yep. Welcome to Michigan in the spring. We're going to yo-yo the shit out of you.
No doubt, right?
We're definitely right? The one of the states where you use the heater in the morning, the windows in the mid-morning afternoon, and then the AC in the afternoon back to the heat at night.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm like, it's so funny. I should have, it won't stick or anything, but it is just funny that we're like at work, we just put the salt buckets away Friday.
Yeah, well, we just put our shovels back in the shed. So I'm sure it was a conglomeration of a lot of people putting their snow equipment away. And Michigan's like, oh, really? That's awfully pretentious of you.
No doubt. Yeah, it's you never know when these late spring snowstorms are just going to are going to crop up, or, you know, more often than not, it's a thunderstorm. But sometimes you get a surprise.
Sometimes mm-hmm. there's some snowflakes in there.
Kind of here and there.
I mean, I've been very grateful for the warmth, you know, like in the winter, you get the sunshine, but it's very rarely ever is it like warm sunshine.
Yeah, so you're right.
Just
right.
Getting the light. And one thing that was pointed out to me, because like I watched D&D streams on YouTube, and some of the warm weather native DMs, when their characters are going through like a frozen wasteland, they're like, the sun comes out and you feel the warmth on your face. I'm like, motherfucker, no, you don't. Like, that never happens. The sun will come out, you will be blinded but still freezing fucking cold. It's not like a balmy 32 degrees,
right?
We're talking like it's 6 degrees outside, you're still fucking cold.
Yeah, the sun can make a difference depending on other factors, but it's never going to be like, oh, I was warm as soon as the sun came out. No, that's not. Yeah.
no but now you get that feeling of the, like the warmth of the sun actually reaching the earth. So that's
right.
That's a good feeling.
Unless you're my daughter, who's allergic to the sun, and then she has to start hiding like a vampire.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I forgot she was allergic to the sun.
We discovered that the hard way at Pagan Fest one year. She came to help us and yeah.
Oh yeah.
Remember all the,
she brought the giant hat.
Right.
Oh, I loved it.
Right. Yeah. I discovered that. Allergic to the sun that summer, so
mm-hmm. Yeah, that sucks right? A lot.
I know.
I develop like a weird rash if I'm in the sun for too long, for like too long periods of time. So I can do like short stints of like 2 or 3 hours, and then after that I'm like, okay, I need to find some shade, otherwise I'll get like bumps and stuff on my skin that gets like kind of itchy. But I feel bad for her, because that would, I mean, it's a good origin story for a villain, really.
Well, the funny part is, this is, of course, the daughter that's getting into Egyptology. So now going to Egypt has been added to her bucket list. And I'm just like, you're going to go to the place that'll kill you, essentially. That's the
well,
sun,
you know,
beating down and
go big or go home.
Yeah, right.
You know,
biggest brimmed hat that's ever existed.
But I don't know. I think it's pretty common for them to be fully covered anyway over there. Like, they wear the lighter colored clothing with the long sleeves and long pants.
Yeah, you know, actually, that's funny, because
hats and stuff. So
yeah, and my stepfather was actually had a sun allergy as well, and he had to wear long sleeves all summer. And that's why I discovered that, you know, like a light colored T-shirt underneath a light colored shirt, man, it's actually cooler sometimes than other options, because it allows more for the wicking and the air movement and stuff. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah. When I worked out in the field a couple of summers ago, that was basically what I would wear, is a long sleeved, lighter weight button up with a tank top underneath. And oftentimes I was far cooler than I was when I was just wearing the tank top, because
right,
my skin wasn't absorbing the sun as much, and I was able to keep like the heat away from me. So
I wanted to share with you guys both. There was something, it was interesting. I thought it was kind of interesting. And we don't have a guest tonight. Everybody is listening. We're going to tackle a couple questions that some people had sent into us. And
I will
chat about some other things, but.
Yeah, I think we should probably preface it before we go into the episode that these are going to be kind of more difficult topics than we usually handle. So this is an official trigger warning. We'll be talking about more difficult things than we usually do. So proceed with caution. And mind yourself and take care of yourself. So.
Yeah. But before we get into that topic, I want to tell you guys, I thought it was kind of interesting. I was listening to Cicero on the nature of the gods, a translation on the Stoic cosmos. And I thought it was really interesting. I didn't realize, you know, we've often kind of talked about this whole, you know, New Age-ish sort of higher, lower vibration thing. But I didn't realize that that's even reflected in ancient Stoic. I didn't realize how much they related it not to energy, but as to airs or rarefied airs. And they literally thought in this text that people who lived in the highlands or the mountains were smarter than people that lived at the lowlands because of the rarefied air. So of course the gods and the stars themselves so far up high would be the smartest things yet. It was perfectly logical. I was like, whoa.
You're using common sense thinking to explain away a thing. You're just like,
right, I thought it was hilarious that it's like,
you're smarter.
You know, what's the ancient Greek translation for dude? They really got high vibes.
Those gods rock.
As it turns out, it's rarefied air, you know, but anyway, this is the... I just thought it was hilarious. They were talking more about, what was the other thing that was in that treatise that was interesting? Oh, the conversation about, it mirrors a lot of what you find in a lot of Christian apologists now, where they look around at this universe. It's so organized. Obviously, it must have had a creator. The Stoics also use that logic to explain the gods, which is funny, but their little addendum at the end makes it even more interesting because it's, of course, there has to be something smarter than humans that created all of this. However, putting a human face on it's just stupid. It's not hilarious. It's like, if you got to try to put a human face on it, you just can't handle this reality anyway. I'm like, you guys were assholes.
Pretty much. And I think it's really interesting how the different Stoics disagreed with each other on this, because you'll also get other Stoics who will kind of like not shoot back so much as not like kind of like amble around the point the other author is making or the other philosopher is making. And well, basically amounts to, I just disagree with them. Or maybe acknowledge their presence if you're like. Anyway, I love these conversations because it just gives you such an insight into where philosophies come out of.
Right.
And how much hasn't changed. Yeah.
But it was funny. I think it just made me laugh the whole, especially when I was like, holy fuck, I think I just heard a Christian apologist use that same argument 10 minutes ago. What the hell? So do we want to go ahead and go into the main topics then, or anything else you guys want to talk about first?
I'm good.
All right. Well, you want to tackle a little bit of a lighter question first?
We'll start off light and then ease into the more delicate one, I guess.
All right. So the question that we received was asking, I mean, this is the family one where family who are fully aware of your pagan beliefs, but still get offended if something is ever posted or mentioned or that doesn't align with their Christian worldview. And, but at the same time, they feel like they can post anything that they want. How do we deal with such a thing? What's a course other people have taken, or what kind of thoughts would you have on something like that?
This one is challenging because it can be very situationally based on the relationship with this particular relative. Like if it's like a mother or a father or a sibling who is doing this to you, it's a little bit different and difficult to take a step back and put up a barrier and kind of cut them out of your life, or, you know, block but remain friends kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that you don't see their stuff. Or I think there is even a way in certain sites to where you can also hide yourself from them but remain friends. And you can choose to go that route. But honestly, if it's more of like an extended family, like more out on the outer fringe type family that you really don't see very often, and they just have a Facebook presence, I'm going to be the asshole in the room and say, just unfriend them, kick them out of your life and move on. Especially if you are respecting their beliefs and not pushing back on them and saying, well, I'm offended by this and I think this is rude or whatever. And they're only showing that behavior towards you when you post more pagan leaning things, then you don't really need that energy in your life. I mean, it is a struggle and it's very hard. And I had an experience similar to this. Unfortunately, it was my aunt who lives very close to my mom. Physically, and is very close to my mom relationship wise, their sisters, who's very deeply Christian. And when she found out my more pagan leanings, and when she found out when I was dating a woman, her words to me were exactly, you are going to hell. And I know that to her, it came as a place of concern, and she was genuinely worried for my soul. But I was very offended by what she said to me. So I, even though she just lived 20 minutes down the road, I cut ties with her completely. When I found out she was going to be at a family function, I would either limit my time there and avoid her, or I would go around the time that she was going to be there. Either I would show up before she showed up or showed up after she left.
Yeah.
Kind of yep. thing. You know, sometimes you cannot get a person to come to the water and drink the respect juice. Sometimes you have to kick them off the farm altogether. And that's just me being me and how I dealt with that particular situation. And now that we're older and she's softened a little bit, we just don't talk about it. You know, if it's not brought up in conversation, then she doesn't ever have to worry about my eternal soul or anything like that. And I don't have to tell her, oh yeah, no, I am going to hell, but I'm going to enjoy it. So I'll see you there. Just a very different type of hell.
That's a hard one because, yeah, like on social media, you can sometimes create subgroups that will only see certain content or things like that. But it's very hard if the relative gets offended. I shouldn't air quote that them. They probably genuinely are offended, but how do you confront that becomes a bit of an issue. Now, especially like if you're having a family reunion or a wedding or a funeral or something, that's a tough one. And it's probably going to depend on every individual, because every individual will handle it different. You know, like when I had a relative pass and, you know, we went to the church, but we got side eye because we joked around a lot because we look at death differently than they do. But, you know, we went, we were respectful. I didn't, but at the same point in time, like if I was hosting something and they came and it was too pagany for them, then it's their damn loss. I'm not going to change nothing. And if they want to be carrying it around that offense, then they can carry that offense around. I don't care. I don't know. What do you think, Sarah?
I don't live for others' comfort.
Yeah.
I think that ultimately, you know, folks need to decide what their priorities are, especially if it's a space where you're going in knowing that these people really don't actually respect your worldview and don't respect you in the bargain.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing wrong with saying, I don't need that shit. There's nothing wrong with saying, well, until and unless you can treat me as an equal, or at least with some amount of respect, well, we're done here.
Yeah.
There are certain conversations that I just don't have because with certain family members, because it's not going to be respectful. It's going to be a conversion attempt, and that will instantly piss me off. Now, I mean, I haven't cut these people completely out of my life, but they're rather dangling by a thread because I just won't put up with it, especially because these folks not only will happily shit on what I believe in, there's, if you can't tamp down your tendency to preach at me, you're not actually, I can never trust that we're having a conversation.
Yep. Yeah. I have relatives that are Mormons, and we could theoretically argue a lot about religion. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of fertile ground there between our two camps, but to argue over. But it's funny because, like, what does respect look like? Sometimes it means not talking about something. I hate this because I love them and they love me. And so we go out of our way to circle around those topics that might bring us conflict. Meanwhile, I've got other relatives that think that it's, you know, there's so much, it's so important that they throw it in my face. It's like, ooh, I guess I don't need to talk to you anymore. You know, I don't know. It's very hard. Now, I will say, now, if it is something like a funeral or a wedding, lean on your officiants sometimes. Because, like, if it's a person, if it's a situation where you can't avoid them, who's going to be a neutral party? Who's going to step in and, like, you know, as much as there are weird things around the term, like priest or priestess or officiant or something like that, like at a wedding or a funeral, something like that. The person that's leading the ceremony comes up to anyone from grandma down to the smallest kid and says, be quiet now. They'll be quiet. It's amazing. And you know, so like in situations like that, rely on your officiants a lot, I think.
And I think when it comes to, like, a wedding, for example, say it's your wedding or somebody else in your family who is also pagan, who is having a pagan wedding, and wants to invite this particular person to the wedding, but is also having fears of what might be said or how they might act or what may go on during the ceremony or at the reception or whatever. Have a conversation with them in whatever form that you are capable of, whether it's in person, over the phone, via a letter, even if you send it with the invitation, you know, write it out for them and say, you know, I respect your beliefs. These are our beliefs. This is what we are doing. This is what the ceremony is going to entail. If that makes you uncomfortable, just come to the reception.
Yeah. Yeah. Come good join point. Us. Just come to the reception.
Skip the ceremony. You don't have to do that part. Just come to the reception and join us and set a boundary and say, please do not try to push or demean or use whatever words you need to use to really set that boundary in firm that says, I don't want you to try to convert any of my guests, my partner, my significant other, whatever, myself. you know, don't bring these specific topics up on my special day. If you do, I will calmly ask you to leave because we are here celebrating love yep. and life. You know, it is totally okay to say those things. I think there is this expected behavior of pagans when it comes to the Christian world that we are meant to cow and bow down to their almighty power and that they're always right. And that whenever we are in any space anywhere that we should always just be hidden, but it's okay to voice your boundaries. It's okay to step forward and say, these are the things that are going to happen. These are the things that I'm okay with. And these are the things that I am not okay with. And if saying those things hurts the relationship you have with this person instead of strengthens it, then I'm not sure there is much of a relationship to be had.
You can also completely go the troll route. Hey, just tell them. If you post, I post. It just doesn't matter. With the, you know, if you make a comment, I make a comment. And you know,
for every Christmas card you send me, I'm right? going to send you a pagan one right back.
That's right.
Yeah, fight fire with fire.
Oh, I post about paganism too much? Hold my mead.
I don't know. Having gone rounds on this with several family members, it isn't necessarily just, well, I'm going to cut them out of my life. It's also, you know, especially when it comes to social media feeds, there are ways that you can say, this person only gets certain posts. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you shouldn't have to censor yourself, but if you want to save the relationship, they don't need to hear this shit. And you don't want to get the flack. So it's really, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, is this relationship worth maintaining? And is it a frith relationship? Is this where you have good peace and social order with this person and they're tied tight enough with you? Or is it a grit situation where it's basically an enforced truce between the two? And if they fire the first shot, is it all over and done with? So, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I let my freak flag fly, and if my family's got an issue with it, they can deal with it on their own. But I also understand that grandma doesn't need to see every little single thing I post. So,
right.
You know, I think there's a back and forth to be had there. How much are you sharing because you really want to share, and how much are you sharing because pissing in their Cheerios is a good time? And hey, I'm not denying that pissing in somebody's Cheerios can be an excellent way to blow time. But is it worthy of you? Is it worthy of you? Is it worthy of your time? And I mean this on both sides of the issue, right? So is it worth your time to share with this person? But also, are they worthy of receiving what you're putting out? And I know it might sound kind of funny to think that, you know, pagan memes might be unworthy of family members. But to a certain degree, if they're not in the club and they're not getting the joke anyway, there's not much of a point to wasting your time on them.
And there is the option to block or unfollow, but remain friends, you know, that way you're not like shoving it in their face that, oh no, I blocked you and deleted you as a friend and you're bringing more fire down on you. But like, I agree a lot with what Sarant was saying, you know, how important is this relationship to you really? And one thing that you learn the older you get is other people will tell you how you should treat them. You know, don't put yourself out there for somebody who isn't willing to meet you halfway. You know, if you're a mile apart, don't walk the entire mile. You're only accountable for half of it. They're accountable for the other half.
Yep.
In any relationship. So figure out how far you've walked trying to carry this relationship and decide whether or not it's time to unhitch the horse and
fuck off to a new travel road.
It definitely does work both ways because, you know, the, you know, just like you're upset if they're posting a ton of Christian stuff all the time, they can be genuinely upset with some of the pagan stuff and because they don't, you know, it's not their cup of tea. They don't understand it, whatever. So it, I don't think there's anything wrong with actually seeking out that truth and saying, hey, how about we just not talk about this so much? You know, like if it's face to face, how about we just not talk about this so much? Mm-hmm. If it's online, they're going to post anyway because they're going to post to people who share their worldview, which they will undoubtedly have on social media. So yeah, you know, take a break from them, unfollow them for a while, go check in on them once in a while with intent, and that way you can see what's going on with them, and you're not bombarded with it all the time. Limit your audience to who certain things get sent out to, and I don't know. There's, yeah, I'm with you, Caitlin. There's nothing wrong with stating those boundaries and what those needs are.
I'd kind of like to expand on this, if you don't mind, just a little bit.
Go for it.
So I think fundamentally what we are also looking at is the difference between blood family and found family, right? So when we're talking people in the pagan community that find each other and they get really tight, whether it's a kindred, a coven, or just groups of people that happen to find each other and they click really well, I think we also kind of, in this society, for various reasons, family are not friends, right? Generally speaking, as far as blood family. And they tend to serve different purposes in our lives. Whereas chosen family can be friends and frequently start off that way and become much more than they started off as, I think to a certain degree, we're looking at situations where, at least in my view, there's a difference between liking somebody and loving somebody. There's a difference between we are in community because of forces beyond my control because we're related by blood or marriage, somebody else's marriage, or by the marriage I'm coming into, for instance. An old saw that my parents would tell me when I was growing up was, you're not just marrying the person, you're also marrying the family. And I find that's quite true. And to a certain degree, you may find that that family is less or more interested in having a relationship with you. And modulating your expectations accordingly is also just part of the deal. I think we got so many different societal factors rubbing up against each other, not just in this conversation, but just in general, that we are renegotiating what it means to be family to start with in a lot of spaces, pagan, queer spaces, activist spaces as well. All of these places in different fashions are renegotiating what healthy ties, boundaries, and such look like. And I think, I know that Innengarth and Utgarth has fallen out of favor in a lot of heathen circles, but I think this is actually a place where the concept shines. Because those who are in your Innengarth, your inner circle, your inner yard, are people that you're just going to want to share whatever comes off the top of your head with, and they're going to be cool with it because they know you and you know them. And then there's going to be people who are Utgarth. And plenty of my family is Utgarth because they're not that type of. And that doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean they're terrible family members. It means that when shit rolls downhill, they're not the people I call. How relevant are these relationships to you? How much are they worth fighting? And how worthy of a fight is it for you to engage in it when they're not willing to put forward the bare minimum of respect? If you cannot respect my existence, there's not a conversation to be had.
Right. And you can keep your relationship with them cordial, especially if they are, you know, an unfortunate relative because two people boned, you know, a few centuries ago and happened to put you guys in the same family tree. But
I love the Caitlin.
I apparently have sass tonight. I don't know where it came from. But I mean, you can still remain cordial with them and but you don't have to be their friend. Like, you don't have to be their knight in shining armor when they need help. You don't have to be close to them at all. You're not obligated to be close to them. I think part of the reason why we're struggling to land on like one official answer is because there really isn't an official answer. And we threw out a ton of threads of like, well, it could be this or well, it could be that. The thing is, we don't know the particular situation. We don't know the relationship with this person. We don't know the history, you know, in situations like this differ greatly in every form, really. And even like you were saying earlier, it's even different between when you're having a wedding for somebody versus when you're having a funeral for somebody. You know, even dealing with the relative in those two different situations would be two totally different ways to handle it, you know?
Yeah, a lot of variables, definitely.
I suppose the way not to handle it is standing over the casket going, well, I guess we're going to figure it out now, asshole.
I mean, people grieve in weird ways.
You know, I'm just kind of stuck on Caitlin's comment. It's going through my head right now that most of us are probably sitting here because sometime back in history, the phrase was said, you got an eligible bachelor son? I've got a bunch of goats. And a daughter.
I mean
it's important to add the daughter
and the daughter the, yes I realize yeah, that.
And the daughter and... It's like you have an eligible son. I have some sheep. Oh, and a daughter.
Okay. Jesus Christ, it's Settlers of Catan all over again. Wheat for sheep. Wheat and wife. I mean, for sheep,
man. It's true, we're all sitting here because deals were made, marriages happened, and kids
right
showed up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, your ancestors boned, okay? It happened.
That's funny. I got stuck on that thought for a minute. Yeah, I love it.
I'm glad you guys understand my humor.
Speaking of ancestors, okay, we're gonna throw in a little extra trigger warning then. We've got some hard questions here.
This is where it's going to turn.
Right. And I do want to specify that Caitlin and Sarah, I'm going to be depending a lot on you for the answers, because the person that asked us knows that there's a lot of general information out there on ancestors, but they were really particularly interested in the heathen perspective on this. So, you want me to go ahead and read the question, or?
Well, and Sarah, I'll be leaning mostly on you because, as you know, we just kind of started this. So I'll give you my
kind of bullshit, Caitlin. I don't want to
hit this. Well, no, time. I mean, I just started the heathen aspect of my path. Mm. Everything else was. Yeah. Okay. Bullshit. Mm. But traditional ancestor worship in a heathen perspective? I got some of it.
I'll be just forthright with you. I mean, so many of us are either making up our own practice as we go along with some historical references here and there, yeah, or we're just figuring it out. So,
yeah, there really is no guidebook to how they did this shit. They just assumed everybody would always remember.
Right.
Unfortunately, and never wrote it down.
God damn it. Yep.
So,
well, it's kind of funny because, you know, the whole thinking the thoughts of constructing a religion versus a thing I was listening to earlier about deconstructing religion. Mm-hmm. Is very interesting because, you know, it's like it occurs to me that a lot of people are deconstructing their Christianity. They're bringing it down and going, well, look how rotten some of these foundations are and how some of these parts didn't hold up. And meanwhile, next door, you got like the heathen tower that is just essentially being constructed out of rocks that were left over from some time ago. And we're not exactly sure where they're used. And let's face it, a lot of the pagan reconstructionism is looking at the Christian deconstructionism and going, yeah, we shouldn't do that. You
see that just, honestly, yeah,
that does not hold up over time. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't do that.
Those stones are compromised. Maybe we shouldn't put them in the. That's right. We shouldn't put them in the shrine.
I mean, it's funny how often other religions look over the fence into the religion next to them's yard and go,
Okay, yeah, I don't like how they set up their landscaping there, so...
Right.
And we need to trim that part off of our tree, because obviously it didn't work out for them, so...
Right, right. Exactly. So it's like... All right, so the question. Once again, trigger warning.
Topics of...
DV abuse, yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. So proceed with caution. Take time for yourself, or end the episode here. And it was wonderful. Thank you for stopping by. We love you. Take care of yourself, exactly. Please.
Right, okay. The message we received was, I'm just starting to deepen my practice as a heathen, and I find myself very interested in speaking to and reaching out to my ancestors, especially when I listen to you discussing it on the podcast. However, a lot of my ancestors were terrible people. We're talking DV abusers, rapists, child abusers, and all sorts of things. So I guess what I'm asking is it possible to venerate the good ancestors? Is it possible to invite a specific type of ancestor to be respected and receive offerings while not welcoming the ones who honestly brought nothing but pain and misery? I think this might be a very divisive issue, as I'm sure some folks would advocate for respecting the ancestors regardless, but my morality goes hand in hand with my spiritual practice, so I simply can't do that. Alternatively, would it be advisable to simply not to venerate the ancestors altogether in my case? And I know, Sarah, you just taught a workshop about this at Convocation, so.
Yeah, I sure did. Before I get into it, Caitlin, did you want to tackle this?
Go for it. I was going to let you take the reins on it and comment as you go. I will eventually talk about my relationship with Hel and how she has kind of helped me deal with some of my more toxic ancestors, because I'm with you. I have some pretty fucking gnarly ancestors. So,
yep.
But we'll get to that in a minute. Saren, go ahead and share what you have.
What I'm going to do is to minimize the triggering of this episode, I'm actually just going to answer this forthrightly and very blunt, because the simple answer to your question of can you venerate the good ancestors and discard the bad is yes. You do not have to worship toxic ancestors. It's not a requirement. Respecting the ancestors does not mean respecting everything they did. You don't have to give them offerings. You don't have to give them any mind. And you can actually ask your powerful ancestors to exclude them from contact with you. This is actually kind of why ancestor worship and ancestor veneration is so powerful. And it's also why I have a lot of powerful ancestors that I call on. Now, when I say powerful ancestors, I mean ancestors that were head of families. I mean ancestors that were priests, spiritual specialists, like spirit workers. I also mean ancestors who held sway in your families in good ways that were for the good of your family members. And I also want to really emphasize the way that I practice ancestor worship is expanded from blood ancestors. So I did just give an hour and a half lecture on this. I know that I need to record these sessions. That will eventually happen. That being said, the ancestors that I understand are not just blood. So the classes of ancestors are blood, spirit, adoption, lineage, initiation. And also things such as related to employment, your hobbies and things like that. People that worked with their hands, for instance. People who have gone through chronic illness. You know, the people in your ancestry do not just have to be blood related. Please look at the ancestors with an expanded lens, and your ancestors really open up, because especially if we only limited ancestors to blood family, we would be missing a lot of queer ancestors that we could call upon, because found family is genuinely a way that, historically speaking, as well as in our modern era, we add to who our ancestors are. That is the pat, simple, boilerplate answer.
And to kind of touchstone off of that, if you think about how human civilization used to be thousands of years ago when we were all in tribes, they weren't necessarily all blood related, but everybody treated each other as though they were family. We lived as a large family that traveled from place to place. You had your neighbors would take care of your kids while you went and worked in the fields, and vice versa. When they had to work, you would take care of their kids. So, I mean, think of people who you have been close to in your life that are not necessarily blood relatives. Who you are isn't just who made you. You know, who you are is who affects you every day in your life. And actually, this advice should come from Jim, but I'm going to bring it up so that hopefully he'll actually talk about it, because it's a beautiful way to get into ancestor worship, is to pick an ancestor who has recently passed within a year or a little more that you are close to, that you have certain triggers that you can know for sure that's who they are. Certain perfume smells or favorite songs or a tone of voice or anything that is exceptionally familiar to the spirit that you can pinpoint and say, yes, absolutely, that's who you are, and work with them for however long you need to get comfortable. That way you can kind of elevate them, make them stronger, and then ask them to maybe be a filter. Or in my case, my grandfather was CEO of transportation at Chrysler Corp. So he's very good at coordinating deliveries and transportations and moving things from here to there and saying, you need to go over there and you need to go over there. So he's in charge of my ancestors and who's allowed to come through and talk to me and who's not. And we have discussions of like, okay, I'm ready to talk to these ones, or I really don't want to talk to these. Can you send them really fucking far away? And he absolutely will, without question or problem. So that's one way to do it. And Jim, if I screwed any of that up, please fix it.
No, you got it right. You got it right. I often say that the best way is with ancestors you knew in real life as the gateway, just exactly as you said. Because if you're going under the theory that you're trying to figure out whether it's a sock puppet or whether it's something else pretending to be that grandparent or aunt or whoever it was, then the longer that you interact with them, the more you'll be able to figure out that's not something that grandpa would have ever said. Right? That's not something that my old college professor would have said. That's just not them. So, you know, that's why you start with that familiarity. And then that person, that being, can, yeah, act as a filter kind of going forward, saying, hey, I trust you. I trust our relationship. Help me figure out who the good and the bad ancestors are, which is actually something I want to touch on a little bit, because I do want to throw out there that obviously the examples that were in that message are pretty strong. And so I can completely understand wanting to avoid those ancestors. But what I do kind of want to throw in there a little bit is that, yeah, we're all toxic, just in different ways, right? So keep in mind that we are products of our time, our environment, and we all have toxic traits. Every single one of us co-hosts, every one of you, we all do. It's just part of being human too. And some of it is just what's toxic to you might not be toxic to me, but to you, I might be very toxic. So keep that in mind, that doesn't necessarily mean that all ancestors are good or bad, because it's usually not that simple. But some ancestors might have toxic traits that you want to keep away from. Some might have a little more toxic personalities that actually could be beneficial to you. And so obviously none of those things that you asked about are things that I would find acceptable. But the example I usually give when I'm telling people about this is like, you had an uncle. He was grouchy as hell. He never married. He was always threatening to run people off with a shotgun. He was just one of those people. Not somebody that you might want to hang out with for love advice, but damn it, you could definitely ask him to keep people away from your house or to keep ill-advised spirits away from you. That's the kind of thing that is a good bouncer. So, you know, keep that in mind, that we all have varying degrees of toxicity. So keep that in mind. And I say that because sometimes in my practices, I found that I can sometimes make the filter too fine and nothing gets through. Right. And so I don't know. For some reason, it feels important just to say that the realization that we all have some sort of toxic traits to someone else. Someone else will find us toxic for some reason or another. So have an understanding that there's degrees of things that you're willing to deal with and things that you aren't and things that you never will. And factor that into your decision-making process.
Right. And while you may not want to work with those particular ancestors right now or pay them any mind, that is totally fine. But there might come a day where you may show some interest in trying to heal or smooth some of those more jagged family lines to help elevate those that come after you and elevate yourself in the process. A very good example that I had to do when I started doing ancestor work, I was very close to my grandfather in life. And when he passed away, it was before I was even on a spiritual path at all, really. It was one of the most devastating days of my life. And when I got onto a spiritual path, of course, he was one of the first ones that I called on for my ancestor worship. And he made a request that I heal one of his ancestors because of what he did. Now, this particular ancestor was awful. And I, to this day, I still harbor some hate for him. I still harbor some damage in my ancestral cords, I guess, with a lack of better words. But I knew that for the men in my life, especially on that side, he needed to be healed. At least what he is now, I guess, in the afterlife, that needed to be reconciled within my family line so that I could help stop it or slow it down from continuing that toxic cycle of abuse from that. And I'm not saying that will always happen within a family line, but in my particular one, it was very, very strong and very prominent. And it was a ton of work that I had to do. And unfortunately for this asshole, he hated women very much to the point where he beat my great-great-grandmother within an inch of her life one day. And her sons started the healing process for me the day they kicked him out of the house at gunpoint and said, "You have to go." And they protected their mother and helped her and healed her and took care of her for the rest of her life. And then it fell to me to finish healing him, to bring him to the point where my brothers, my nephews, my uncles on that side of the line would not be affected by that particular cancer. I did that for my family.
I was just thinking that, you know, it's funny because you say healing and I can understand even if some people got upset at using that term in conjunction with an ancestor that did such horrific things. And I can understand not wanting to use that phrasing even, but I, you know, like sometimes a pruning is in order. I would say
that least, too.
You know, we are pruning that thing from our lineage so it doesn't go forward, that sort of thing. I mean, use whatever, I guess what I'm saying is use terms and use methods that make sense to you, because not all of us are going to be able to come from a healing sort of mentality, but.
Right. It's funny that you use pruning, because as soon as I healed him and as soon as he came around to accepting that sort of elevated state, I cut him from the tree and said, "Good luck. See you later, asshole.
There you go. I did what I'm going to do. You're out of here."
Yep. And I told my grandfather, "I never want to see him again. He's not welcome at my altar." I did what I had to for him. he's not welcome here. He's not welcome to my offerings. He's not welcome to this space. In fact, when I was working with him, I had created a separate altar specifically for this ancestor so he would not sully or taint my actual ancestor.
Oh, that's fascinating.
They were right next to each other because they were obviously connected.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not welcome on my actual ancestor altar.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do kind of like that, yeah.
But and you don't have to go to the extent that I did. That was a request from my grandfather to do that for his grandpa. You know, and I felt a little bit obligated to do that for him because of how much work that he has done for me. Kind of in a reciprocity sense, but also to protect the males in my line. But you absolutely do not have to interact with those people at all whatsoever for any reason. If it makes you uncomfortable, if it hurts you, if it scares you, don't do it.
Everybody's path is going to be a little bit different. So like your grandfather's spirit asked you to do something where, and even then you could have said no.
I absolutely could have. Yeah. And he would have understood if I said no. Yep. It would have just been passed down to somebody beyond me. Maybe, possibly. But one of our listeners said in the chat, I think to something that you were saying, Jim, if you don't have an ancestor to ask to help organize or be a bouncer, quote unquote, you can also ask a deity you are close to for help with that.
Exactly. Underworld deities are really good for that. But you know, obviously a lot of deities have lots of talents. So
yeah, deities are strong beings. Do the ting.
Yes, exactly.
Whether or not it's an underworld deity, it should be a deity that you have a good solid relationship with.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
especially if you're dealing with something as close to you as your ancestor altar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also, you know, I'll throw out there the other two that we talked about a little bit about with the previous episodes about working with land spirits too. So like, if you're not deity inclined, there are powerful beings all around you. So there are trees that might've been standing for multiple generations of your ancestors. Obviously there's mountains, there's rivers, there's other things, but yeah, make sure it's something that you're close to.
And I don't know how you guys feel about that aspect of it, but I'm one of the ones that lean towards the earth is also my ancestor, just a bigger, more primal one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're uncomfortable working with blood ancestors, because they are abusive or have harmed other people in atrocious ways or were a part of genocides or whatever, and you really don't want to work with them, but you want an ancestor worship of sorts, remember you come from the earth and you will go back to her. So all of her animals, all of her plants, all of her trees, all of the beings, rocks, rivers, lakes, whatever, they are also your ancestors. And another thing to remember is that you yourself are a living ancestor. Being in right relationship with yourself will also help you have a right relationship with your ancestors, dead and alive. So it really just depends on where you want to start with an ancestor worship.
Yep. And even with the examples I threw out earlier, you know, and Sarah said it earlier that, you know, you don't have to be blood relatives to be an ancestor. I've told people that have had really difficult times with family situations that maybe it was a teacher, maybe it was a friend. In extreme cases, maybe it was somebody that you admired a lot or was an influence on your life in some other way. Those are ancestors too. So if you are completely intimidated by the thought of working with your blood family, there are options. So, you know.
Go ahead, Sarant.
go ahead.
I was going to kind of take it and like shift it in like a slightly different direction.
Go for it.
So if you had something to add to that topic before we moved.
Well, I wanted to speak to something actually in the original question. Would it be advisable simply not to venerate the ancestors altogether? So something that you just mentioned was talking about the Earth as an ancestor. And if you're going to cut ancestors completely out of your practice, at least in the expanded way that I understand the ancestors, you're going to cut out a lot of gods too. And so whether that's Othin or Heimdall, depending on who you understand is the Rig in Rig's Thula, you might also be cutting out the eldest ancestor, fire itself. You might be cutting out ice. You might be cutting out, you know, depending on what your view of an ancestor includes. If you forego ancestor worship altogether, there's a lot of ancestors you could be leaving that are sources of beauty and strength and power and love. And I think this is definitely a situation where throwing out the baby with the bathwater is not really in most people's best interests. I get the impulse, but I will advise most people to at least keep the expanded view of the ancestors, because statistically speaking, not all your blood ancestors are assholes. And statistically speaking, not all your ancestors in general were assholes.
I will also throw out there, though, really, if you want to go the ultimate opposite of that, Sarenth, you and I remember a time when in modern pagandom and heathenry, nobody talked about ancestor veneration. That's something within our memory of that was new to people's practices. And so it's all mm-hmm. being expanded on constantly and reevaluated constantly. So if the ultimate question is, you know, like it's not the person that asked the question, that wasn't the nature of their question, but for any listeners, if you ultimately come to the conclusion that, no, I don't want to do this, you don't have to. It hasn't even been part of anything forever. You know, like modern paganism and heathenry, it's still a fairly new phenomenon. And if you decide not to do it, then you're just like a lot of people that came before. So don't worry about it.
I mean, real talk, modern heathenry ain't that fucking old, folks. We are still in a lot of ways in the very beginning stages of forming religious communities, let alone religious identity.
Right. Obviously, what? You know, obviously, like, you know, African traditional religions, they have a much longer history of ancestor veneration, as do other areas of the world. For like modern neo-paganism and heathenry and such, yeah, it's all pretty brand spanking new.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all just kind of flying by the seat of our pants with this sort of thing and guesswork mostly.
I wouldn't say guesswork. I would say experience.
Probably. Well, or experimenting. A lot of people have found things that this works better than this, or you should try this instead of that, or there's a long history in this sort of idea of having these sort of results. Let's try applying that to ancestor work.
Right. Or like our last guest, well, there's some clues that this might have been something like this. Let's go find out.
Yes, let's skip off into the void. And really, you don't have to have a deep ancestor worship in order to be a heathen. You can simply have a place somewhere in your home, maybe close to the hearth or within the kitchen or on a shelf somewhere in your living room, to where you just have a candle, a favorite thing of theirs. And every now and again, you just tip your hat at it and go, "Hey guys, how's it going? Let's sit down and watch some TV." Or, "Hey grandma, I'm going to cook my favorite recipe of yours tonight. Why don't you hang out with me for a little while?" It doesn't have to be big, amazing, or challenging things like what I described earlier. Now, the work that I did with that particular ancestor, I think took me over a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years to get through work with him. And it was at times brutal because of what he did. And there were times when I just put it down and fucking walked away from it because I was pissed and I couldn't do it. And that is all okay as well. You know, you don't have to, this is cross country, you guys. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, take your time with it and figure out what you're comfortable with.
It's not a marathon. You have to run.
That's very, yes. You don't have to run it. You can walk all, 36 miles?
Oh, I'm saying you don't even have to participate in the fucking marathon at all. Like, if this is such a triggering issue.
Right.
Don't until you can approach it.
Yeah.
And this is also incidentally why I recommend. So I want to put down a definition here. There is a very big fucking difference between ancestor worship and veneration and ancestor work. There is a huge fucking difference here. And some people mix the two. It drives me up a fucking tree. Maybe Yggdrasil. The reason being is the way that I use ancestor worship and veneration. Now, to me, they're the same thing. Some people like to split hairs because worship sounds too churchy, which is fine. Everybody has their hangups. That's not one of mine. Ancestor worship and veneration is the respect and cultivation of a good relationship with the ancestors. Ancestor work is specifically doing work for and with the ancestors in a spiritual capacity. Not everybody is cut out to do ancestor work. I would actually say that a lot of people are not. And this is not a judgment on whether or not you're a good practitioner. It's a question of suitability. It is no different than somebody approaching spirit work. The same way that I will say there are some people who are not fucking wired for this job because ancestor work is a job. Some people are just not wired for it. Some people don't have the capacity for it. Some people, it is contraindicated for their ongoing spiritual, mental, and physical well-being to do this shit. This does not mean that you are less of a pagan, a polytheist, a spirit worker, whatever.
Yep.
Some of us just have shit we shouldn't be doing.
Yep.
Yeah, sometimes it's not your circus, not your monkeys.
Yeah, as Emily says in the chat too, you don't have to make all the decisions at the start. I used to say when I was doing more of the coaching that there really, if you really want to take a look at it, there is no wrong spiritual path for you, because no matter what you do, it's still your damn spiritual path. And that means sometimes you might get really intense into something for a while and then not touch it again forever, or you know, until years later, or you circle around, your views shift on things depending on what's going on in your life. I mean, it's not so solid as a yes, no. Sometimes things morph over time.
So I say all of that to put out that ancestor work is not something I recommend for people fresh new. I do not recommend people heal their ancestors. I don't recommend people work with toxic ancestors. I don't recommend people do jack fuck shit with their ancestors outside of the good ancestors, the solid ancestors, the powerful ancestors. I call them the Desir, which are powerful female ancestors, the Fedrar, which are the powerful male ancestors. I used to call them the Vader.
The Fetir, yeah.
Yeah, which is German for fathers. Fedrar is Old Norse. I'm just trying to keep shit simple.
Yeah.
The Ergi, which are the powerful outcast queer ancestors, and then the Thavur, which are the powerful queer ancestors. These are the ones that, before any others, the powerful ancestors are the ones I would call on first, because they organize the lines of your ancestors. They're the ones that are the first line of defense. They're the ones that deal with the muck and the shit. They're the ones that will also deal with you when you die. So the powerful ancestors are your first, and in some cases, the last line of defense with toxic ancestors, like the ones that our commenter or listener is talking about here. And especially if you are fresh new to any spiritual path, please do not fucking do this work. You need to have a solid relationship with ancestors you trust and know before you engage in this stuff because of how heavy this lift is. This would be like, if you're trying to do this work straight off, fresh new to heathenry, it would be like walking into a gym and expecting to deadlift 300 right off the bat. Don't fucking do it. You're going to break yourself. If you happen to lift the goddamn thing, good on you. That might be a one-off before you snap yourself in half.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, the entire gym is on fire and the floor is fucking lava. Like, right. Just don't do it, you know?
And it doesn't, again, it does not mean that you're not a good practitioner or that you can't become one. It doesn't mean that you're not strong in your new faith. It means you can look at that set and go, that's not for me yet. Having that discernment down in front and being gentle with yourself, mm-hmm. especially if you're fresh new to heathenry, please be gentle with yourself, because you've got enough ancestors in your family line that haven't been gentle with you, yeah. whose echoes are not gentle with you.
And honestly, their victims would benefit from your attention more than they ever would.
Yep.
But you need to use some discernment with the victims as well, depending on how traumatic or traumatizing the abuse was that was inflicted on them. Because then you run into issues of energetic leeches or vampires, especially if they haven't come to an agreement within themselves that says, okay, I'm dead. I don't need to carry this anymore. I don't need to be affected by this anymore. So having, like Saren said, a relationship with the more powerful ancestors, the ones that have healed themselves, the ones that have crossed over and said, okay, I'm here to do this work for my family so that it doesn't continue. Having a relationship with them first will help you help the others. And I'm not even talking about the toxic ones. I'm talking about the victims of the toxic ones. One thing that I used to do, and I think I got the idea from you, Jim, was I set up an altar outside of my home, but still within the boundaries of my property. And there are certain things that I had on it. One was a small, like a makeup mirror, a candle, which is usually one of those 7-day candles, an offering bowl, and something else. I think it was like a smudge stick of some sort. I'm sorry, not smudge, but a cleansing stick of some sort. And that is where I would send my more problematic ancestors, the ones I didn't want within my home, but I felt I still had an obligation to care for, quote unquote, because I was one of those spirit workers of like, I need to care for everybody that is around me all at once because I'm a psycho. I took that altar down several years ago because it was affecting my land and it was,
you were not a psycho. You were doing self-care.
No. I was saying I was a psycho for taking care of everything around me. The self-care was stepping back and saying, don't do that anymore.
You had absorbed toxic lessons. Let me put it that way. I bristle at the psycho bit.
Oh, I am very sorry. And self-depreciation is not funny. It wasn't even meant as a joke. I was just being mean to myself. That's old habit. And I do apologize. I'll try to get rid of that word out of my vocabulary.
It's a process, but
yeah, I didn't realize it was a problematic for you.
Yeah. And I also don't think you should beat yourself up so harshly.
Hi, have you met me? Yeah, I know it is a process. I am genuinely working on it. It will take me a very long time. But what I'm trying to get at in a very long-winded and sort of brutal way is those toxic ancestors, the abusive ones, et cetera, don't require your attention, and you don't need to give them attention if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Sorry.
You can very easily pull in the gentler ones. And it kind of what I wanted to talk about, the what I wanted to go into is methods and ways of doing that. How would you guys go about setting up an altar that was geared more towards a gentler ancestor or ones that you actually wanted to bring in? For me, if I had access to it or was able to, I would write down their names. I would put up their pictures. I would put up items that belong to them. I would put down colors that they liked, or maybe theme the altar in a certain way. Like my grandmother, who passed away a year ago, loved eucalyptus, both the dried plant and the smell and everything. So when I want to bring her around, I have a eucalyptus oil that I'll bring out and kind of just smell and bring her to mind and then call her forward kind of thing. Just little things like that. If you're unsure of what these individuals looked like, if you haven't met them, maybe, you know, you're talking way back in the line, go for softer, more feminine things, or just softer things in general. Put flowers out, put out a candle, put out water or sweet treats, you know, and set the intention of the altar saying, I want to call forth the good ancestors, the good, helpful, kind ancestors.
Right. Set that intent right from the beginning. I tend to use a lot of like light colored objects and flowers and cleansing herbs. I tend to incorporate that at the beginning a lot too. So that would be one route that you could take if you didn't have an ancestor that you were starting with, you know, your starting bouncer essentially. So it would be, make sure you set that intent well. There's nothing to say you can't take it back down. Sorry, you can. It has happened where altars have come down. Caitlin, you just spoke about one earlier for outside type spirits.
I mean, I redo my actual ancestor every couple of years, and sometimes once a year, I'll take the whole thing down, clean it off, take things off, put new things on, that kind of thing.
Yep. And that, like we were saying, those bouncers can act as a guide for who you want to work with and who you don't, or who you want to venerate and who you don't. That could be really helpful. But that's an important thing, I think, is that you can chuck them on out of there. They still have to prove themselves. Like if we're going from a theory of spiritual accounting and that sort of thing, they can introduce themselves. They can say hello. You can find out more about them. They still got to prove themselves. They still got to earn your trust. You don't have to automatically work with anything just because it shows up. That trust needs to be earned.
Yeah, I mean, just because they're family doesn't mean they're complete dicks.
Let's be honest. It doesn't mean that they care about you all that much, or that they are who they say they are.
Yeah. Or if they even want to be helpful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember one of the things you used to talk about was, you're very Christian or Catholic grandparent might think they're being very helpful, but would cause major problems within your life because you are practicing pagan.
Right. Or, you know, even the earlier example I used with the ornery uncle. Lived alone, hated everybody. Not the one you want to ask for relationship advice. You know, just because they're ancestors doesn't mean they were good at everything.
Yeah, don't.
Just don't because talk they to passed the, doesn't really mean they know everything.
Sorry. Right, don't talk to the gun-toting racist redneck about, you know, advice on how to be inclusive.
Right.
He's not going to be helpful. Believe me.
Is there anything, I know, Caitlin, you had mentioned earlier about your relationship with hell and how that affected things. Is there anything that is more heathen specific in any of these topics that you guys would like to expand on?
I
have to apologize to our listeners. I realize some of the work that I do with Hell might be a little advanced for some people and difficult for me to explain in a wider range in view. I guess the one thing I can say is the way I view her realm is kind of similar to the way I view the flow of my ancestors, I guess. The way I have seen her realm through journeying and through descriptions, and I can't remember which ones or where, because some say that Niflheim is not part of Helheim and Helheim is a totally different place, and then other ones say that they're like connected, but whatever, I'm not, that's neither here nor there. And it's also a lesson that she has taught me, and I'm treading very carefully through this. But on the one side, she has a beautiful, thriving, growing fields and beautiful homes and a thriving community and families that love and support each other. And it is a wonderful, healthy place. And that is kind of the energy that I based my current ancestor altar off of, is that inclusive, supportive, loving, abundant space is that side of Hell. And then the other side is more poison and swords and pain and punishment and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all the betrayers and the oath breakers and the cowards and all the more toxic people are on the other side of this particular poison river. And that's kind of where all the bad ancestors go, is over yonder. And I will randomly go over there and be like, all right, you guys ready to like get off your like pity party thing? Cause I can help you cross the bridge and go over there if you want. And usually I get, no. None of them are ready to come out of that. And sometimes that's where they have to stay. And that's where they will stay forever. And that is something, that is a lesson that Hell taught me. That sometimes ancestors will be willing to heal through their bullshit and step up and be a useful, helpful, kind, accommodating, abundant ancestor, to take responsibility for what they did and grow with the tree instead of against it. And other times they're going to be total fuckheads that just want to cut themselves constantly on the swords and cry about the poison in their veins and be a douchebag so they can just stay out over there. It's fine.
I like that. That's funny. I like it because it's so funny because like you compare it to the other version of Hell or Hell's realm or whatever, the fact that they're just like, you know, you could leave this place if you just stop being such an asshole. No, but I'm staying.
It's like, look, man, it's super easy. Like the bridge is like right there. But walking over the bridge is very difficult because then all their chains and all their the thorns and shit have to come out while they're walking. And, you know, the bridge isn't exactly nice and flat. It's got cobblestones and all sorts of kind of stuff. But
got to go haunt people on Christmas Eve. Bullshit like that.
Right. You know, I got to go. I'm pissy.
How about you, Sarah? Any extra words you want to add in there?
Yeah. So something that I've been doing since about the halfway mark through this episode is I lit a pipe with mugwort in it. And I felt called to do that because I've got some heavy ancestor shit coming around myself. But also because the ancestors wanted to smoke and so did I. The if we believe in personal responsibility, whether or not these ancestors ever heal themselves is ultimately a process they're going to go through or not as a result of their own choices. Now, because I also believe that heathenry is communal as well as an individual religious pathway, we can be a helping hand, but we can't take that journey off of their hands. We cannot take their obligations from them. And regardless of how horrible your ancestors have been in their history, they will carry those obligations. And part of the weight that may keep them in places like the Nostrand is the weight of the obligations that they have betrayed. What may also be of some comfort is you, in your obligation as an ancestor in the making, can make choices that they chose not to make in life. Part of the power of you being here on the other end of so much pain, so much abuse, and so much is you get to make the choice to break the cycle. You get to make the choice to say, this far, no further. You get to make the choice to say, this taint is coming out of my family's lines. You get to make the choice as to who receives the honors. You get to make the choice who gets to receive the blessings of the herbs, the blessings of the waters, the blessings of the food. You, as the latest iteration of your family, the latest iteration of your ancestors, blood and bone, spirit, adoption and lineage, you are carrying all these ties into the future. Whether you have children or not is beside the point. Everybody carries legacy. Everybody. And if the legacy of your ancestors was toxic, you can choose to be a living salve. You can choose to be a living antidote. And all you have to do is live well. You don't have to do anything extra if you're not called to it. You don't have to do anything extra if it's not in your orlog, if it's not in the weaving of your earther to do. It's not yours. You don't have to worry about it. However, if you are the latest carrier of the ancestors in your family and you are the only person who worships, venerates, or works with them, you carry a great deal of influence and power in your family because you are the only living link. To a certain degree, you get to call the shots because you're the living link. You wield a great deal of power in this situation because you get to decide which way the ship goes. And I am using the term ship in a very intentional setting here because part of some of these heathen burials are literally ships that were buried, such as the Osberg ship burial, literally outlines of ships with rocks. So the idea of captaining the ship is a very, 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 very fucking old theme in heathenry. Also, opening of certain places, such as mountains, the erection of certain holy places, such as the Helgafell, which was one of the first sacred places in Iceland when it was colonized. You have the choice each and every day to be the ancestor you are coming into this world with and to the next world as. As a heathen, you get to choose what magic you wield and what direction and how. You may not be able to decide upon the effects and the consequences of your actions. However, the way you walk and the way you weave in this life is your choice. If you choose to take up any of these ancestors, you might erect a great healing in your family line, but you are not under a strict religious obligation to do so. You might amass amazing allies and friends and beauty in your life without ever touching your family lines. It is not required for you to lift up the abusers in your line so they have a better shot in the afterlife. You're not under that obligation. If you want to do it, if it's something that calls to you, that's great. But it's not an obligation that I believe most heathens carry. It's not an obligation I believe most ancestor workers carry. I would like to offer a cleansing. I would like to offer a cleansing, and I would like your consent as hosts on this show. It's just going to be a simple Ansu's Galder that people can listen to. For those who are in the listening, if this is an acceptable thing, because I know that we're talking about really deeply heavy subjects.
I think that sounds really good. I think if it sounds appropriate to you guys, we're closing it on the 2-hour mark. So how about we say our thank yous? You do your Ansu's cleansing, Sarah, and then I'll roll our close music. Sound like a plan? So that way I can bookmark this and everybody can find it. So,
yes. I think that's right. Great.
All right. Well, with that, thank you, everybody who sent in questions. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. We appreciate you all so much. And we love these questions. So keep them coming. And as always, there's a lot of really amazing discussions on the Around Grandfather Fire Discord group as well. People who answer questions and go into amazing depth of topic on some things. So it's really quite an amazing community that I encourage you all to join.
I do want to say one thing before we close.
Mm-hmm.
Above everything else, whether you're working with problematic ancestors or problematic living ancestors, always take care of yourself. Look after your own heart, look after your own minds, look after your own souls. And it'll be easier that way for you. You know, because then you have the strength to take care of your community, take care of the family that is closest to you, whether that's blood or not. As long as you are taking care of yourself, you are being a good spirit worker. You are being a good magic worker. You are being a good ancestor worker or death worker or whatever type of work you do. As long as you are taking care of yourself. And Sarah reminded me of this earlier, and I do apologize for being mean to myself. And I could make an excuse and say it's just me, but I'm not going to do it because I'm a good storm.
So then you get yelled at again?
Yeah, probably. but just take care of yourself, and then you can take care of everyone else later. I just had to say.
Sounds great. All right. With that, we'll talk to you next time around the fire. Take it away, Sarah.
Hail to our gods of the dead. Hail to the Desir, the Federar, the Ergi, the Tavur. The good and healthy ancestors, please come forward and help us to do this work. Hail to the healthy ancestors. Please come forward and help us to do this work. Hail to the good Vaitir in our lives, those from whom we draw strength, whether God, ancestor, or Vaitir. We ask you for cleansing. We ask you for cleansing. We ask you for cleansing. We ask you for strength. We ask you for strength. And we ask you for strength. They're actually asking me to do 3 runes. Is that okay with folks? Okay, I'm getting a thumbs up. Hail Runeteer, Hail Runeteer. Thank you for helping me to do this work. Thank you, Holy Ones, for this work. Hail Ansus, thank you for cleansing us within and without, and for encouraging and bringing forth good communication with the healthy ancestors, with the good ancestors, the powerful ancestors. Hail Gabo. Thank you for grounding and centering us. Thank you for teaching us gift for a gift, gift for gift. Thank you for helping us achieve good reciprocity within ourselves, our souls, between ourselves and others, between ourselves and our good, healthy, Hail ancestors. El Algis, the elk sedge that cuts, the elk that roams the forest, the tree with the deep roots, Yggdrasil, our elder ancestors, Askr and Embla, ash and elm, Yorth herself, rooted deep. Algis, thank you for bringing us protection. Thank you for bringing us rootedness. And thank you for bringing us into alignment and into good relationship with the earth beneath our feet, the sky above us, and us between. Each of us a living ancestor, each of us a living tree. Stuile.